Our reading this morning is from the book of Exodus. Surprise, surprise, if you've been here for a while. Exodus chapter 14. I'll start reading from verse 10. The Israelites have finally walked out of Egypt after the plagues and are walking towards the Red Sea, only to find that Pharaoh is behind them. And from verse 10. As Pharaoh approached, the Israelites looked up, and there were the Egyptians marching after them. They were terrified and cried out to the Lord. They said to Moses, "Was it because there were no graves in Egypt that you brought us to the desert to die? What have you done to us by bringing us out of Egypt? Didn't we say to you in Egypt, 'Leave us alone, let us serve the Egyptians'? It would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians than to die in the desert." Moses answered the people, "Do not be afraid. Stand firm and you will see the deliverance the Lord will bring you today. The Egyptians you see today you will never see again. The Lord will fight for you. You need only to be still." Then the Lord said to Moses, "Why are you crying out to me? Tell the Israelites to move on. Raise your staff and stretch out your hand over the sea to divide the water so that the Israelites can go through the sea on dry ground. I will harden the hearts of the Egyptians so that they will go in after them, and I will gain glory through Pharaoh and all his army, through his chariots and his horsemen. The Egyptians will know that I am the Lord when I gain glory through Pharaoh, his chariots and his horsemen." Then the angel of the Lord, who had been traveling in front of Israel's army, withdrew and went behind them. The pillar of cloud also moved from in front and stood behind them, coming between the armies of Egypt and Israel. Throughout the night, the cloud brought darkness to one side and light to the other, so neither went near the other all night long. Then Moses stretched out his hand over the sea, and all that night the Lord drove the sea back with a strong east wind and turned it into dry land. The waters were divided, and the Israelites went through the sea on dry ground with a wall of water on their right and on their left. Then the Egyptians pursued them, and all Pharaoh's horses and chariots and horsemen followed them into the sea. During the last watch of the night, the Lord looked down from the pillar of fire and cloud at the Egyptian army and threw it into confusion. He jammed the wheels of their chariots so that they had difficulty driving, and the Egyptians said, "Let's get away from the Israelites. The Lord is fighting for them against Egypt." Then the Lord said to Moses, "Stretch out your hand over the sea so that the waters may flow back over the Egyptians and their chariots and horsemen." Moses stretched out his hand over the sea, and at daybreak the sea went back into its place. The Egyptians were fleeing towards it, and the Lord swept them into the sea. The water flowed back and covered the chariots and horsemen, the entire army of Pharaoh that had followed the Israelites into the sea. Not one of them survived. But the Israelites went through the sea on dry ground, with a wall of water on their right and on their left. That day the Lord saved Israel from the hands of the Egyptians, and Israel saw the Egyptians lying dead on the shore. And when the Israelites saw the great power the Lord displayed against the Egyptians, the people feared the Lord and put their trust in him and in Moses, his servant. I wonder whether any of you have seen an epic movie recently. A few years ago, they were all the rage. Well, I say a few years ago, quite a number of years ago, they were all the rage. We had a spate of them. We had things like Gladiator, and Kingdom of Heaven, and Saving Private Ryan, and Troy, and Alexander. Oh, and who can forget Lord of the Rings trilogy, Editor's Cut. That was an epic. Watched it all. It was an epic. A while ago, I re-watched an epic that I'd seen. It was called King Kong. Not the old version, but the eagerly awaited remake of the classic original. And boy, you know, you really go through it when you're watching an epic film, don't you? I mean, I found it a bit odd at first, watching a giant gorilla for 3 hours or more. I thought, this is a bit strange. But soon I got into it. And, you know, I watched this gorilla as it tore people apart, literally, in two. I watched it as it trampled forests, as it destroyed homes. I watched it kidnap a woman who continually screamed throughout the whole movie, which was slightly irritating, as he carried her through the jungle, destroying everything in its path. I watched it destroy dinosaurs, and I watched it taken to New York and destroy most of New York. I watched it kill people. I watched it carry this screaming woman to the top of the Empire State Building. And at that point, I watched it trying to be shot by lots of planes. And it was then that I thought, oh, it's quite sweet, really, isn't it? Maybe we could be friends. I had these odd sensations, these odd feelings. And I thought, you know, ethics take you through it. One minute you're angry, one minute you're high, one minute you're low, one minute you're in love with the character who's just killed everyone. An epic is described in the dictionary as a long series of events characterized by adventure or struggle. A long series of events characterized by adventure or struggle. And that certainly describes King Kong to me. But, you know, I also think it describes the book of Exodus and the passage we've just read. Because, you see, as you'll know if you've been here each week, and even if you haven't, you might know, there's a lot of things that have gone on before we get here that would be described as an epic. We've seen at the end of the book of Genesis the Israelites prospering in Egypt. They're becoming a large nation. And then we saw at the beginning of Exodus how Pharaoh tried to control that nation by killing all the boys of the nation. And then we saw what followed years of cruelty, slavery, where the Israelites cried out to God. And then Moses was sent. And lots of things happened, followed by the 9 plagues, which we looked at briefly last time. And then the Passover, which we focused on, which God used to bring the Israelites out of Egypt. We've seen already, before we get to this point, 430 years of Israel at the hands of the Egyptians as slaves. And now in chapter 14, we see them finally boldly walk out of Egypt as one nation. They're finally destined for a new land, for a promised land. They're finally destined for a land that they can live in peace and worship their own God without trouble. And as they walk out of Egypt, we're told that they have the Lord ahead of them. They have a pillar of cloud to guide them by night, and a pillar of fire to guide them by day, and a pillar of fire to guide them by night. As they walk out of Egypt, they are a free people, and their God is walking in front of them. They are truly free. If this was an epic film, this would be the final scene. Then you'd have the music. Then you'd roll the credits. Then you'd bring on the Oscars. And we'd all collapse in our seats, totally exhausted, and go, oh, thank goodness that's over. I must go and see it again. But you know, not in the epic adventure of the people of God. This is not the end. Oh no, not by a long shot. Because you see, after being led out of Egypt, they are led to the Red Sea, the Sea of Reeds. And instead of being free, instead of walking into a land of their own, instead of seeing the promises of God all laid before them after their struggles, they find themselves facing the sea with no way to cross. They have mountains on one side, they have foreign nations on the other side who wouldn't be too friendly towards them, and they have the sea in front of them. In effect, the people of Israel, after boldly walking out of Egypt, find themselves at a dead end. And as if things couldn't get any worse, they look behind them and they see the full Egyptian army chasing after them. And we're not talking a few snipers here. We're talking chariots, officers, horsemen, troops, the full force of the Egyptian army as Pharaoh realizes his mistake is bearing down on them. No longer coming to capture them and take them as slaves, but in reality coming to kill them, to destroy them. A trained army versus men, women and children, versus young and old, well and sick. A trained army versus family units, with all their belongings and half of the Egyptian belongings as well, and nowhere to go and little food. A trained army bearing down on a bunch of overladen people who think they're going to be free. People who have nowhere to go, people who have no weapons, people who have no way of hiding, people who are trapped. They're hemmed in. They're absolutely terrified. Now, this is like one of those last epic battles in an epic movie, isn't it? Battle for Helm's Deep in Lord of the Rings, perhaps. Everyone cowering, waiting to be killed. But in Exodus 14, there's a vital difference with this battle. It's not just an epic movie battle. Because in Exodus 14, behind everything that happens is the hand of God. Behind all that goes on, crafted to perfection, is the God of Israel. Behind the seeming chaos of a group of people who are trapped, God is in control. Nothing is left to chance in this battle, because this is an important moment for Israel. This is an important moment. And so when the time is just right, God moves the pillar of cloud and the pillar of fire behind Israel, in between the two peoples, and keeps them there all night, keeping the Egyptians at bay. And then he tells Moses to stretch out his hand over the sea. And all through the night, God pushes back the waters until there's a great wall of water on one side, a great wall of water on the other, creating a path of dry ground through the middle of the sea so the Israelites can walk across. And then, according to plan, God throws the Egyptian army into confusion as he releases the pillar of cloud and the pillar of fire, and they go through the sea. And then he brings the walls of water down upon the Egyptians, killing every single one of them. In this epic story, in this epic battle, there is a difference. In this long series of events characterized by adventure or struggle, God is in control. God is in control. And when the Israelites saw the great power the Lord displayed against the Egyptians, the people feared the Lord and put their trust in him and in Moses, his servant. This event is an important moment in the history of the people of Israel, because this event is orchestrated by God. It's not their doing. It's orchestrated by God, their God, the God who delivers, the God who brought them out of Egypt, the God who delivered them through the sea, the God who enabled them to walk out on dry ground. They will never forget this moment. It will always be included in the Passover. They may forget how to follow God now and again, but they will never forget this moment of deliverance. They will never forget the moment when God finally enabled them to walk out of danger on dry ground. And you know, often I think we look at this as people who read the Bible, and it's easy for us to go, this is a true Christian epic. Someone should make it into a film. Oh, they have. You know, we think it's a true Christian epic, or we think, oh, what a great Sunday school story. We could all take parts. Oh, the children could act this, that, and they could act. What a brilliant thing to do on a Sunday morning with the children. And we kind of put this story into a category of a children's story or a great story to read. But the truth is, you know, when we read this passage, we need to remember that this God who did all these amazing things is our God too. This God who brought Israel out of Egypt and delivered them from the hand of the Egyptians through the Sea of Reeds, this is our God. This is the God we worship today. This is the God we've gathered before now. This is the God who delivers us today. This is the God who loves us today. This is the God who, believe it or not, is in control today. This is our God. And you know, I can understand that sometimes it's hard to believe that this is our God, isn't it? Because often it's easy to believe, you know, well, God holds no real power today. It's easier to look around and to think, well, actually, God makes little difference today. It's easier to believe, well, God's not really involved in all that's going on. How can he be involved in all that's going on? Look what is going on. Or we can think, well, God can't really help me in my situation because, well, it's just such a huge, big mess of a situation. How can God help me? It's easy for us to even think, well, God doesn't like Hollywood movies or epics. It's easy for us to think lots of things about God today when things don't go as planned. But that's not who God is. The God of Israel is our God. The God we read about in Exodus 14 is our God. And if we forget that, we need to look again. We need to think again. We have a God today who delivers. We have a God today who can bring our lives out of darkness. We have a God today who can enable us to walk out of trouble on dry ground. This is our God. This is our God. He looks after us in life, and he promises to look after us in death. This is our God today. This is the truth that we need to believe. And you might say, oh, well, that's good to know. It's good to be reminded of that, Kate. It's good to be reminded of that, especially on Remembrance Sunday when we've just been focusing on the terrible things that happen. But actually, although it's good to know, well, my life still hurts. Actually, although it's good to know, Kate, my life's still tough. I still feel like I'm in darkness. I don't like where I am at the moment. I don't like what's going on. It's good to know about God. But how does that really help me in my situation, right now, today? Well, if we've thought like that, or if we think like that, then we're not alone. Because the people of Israel in this passage had similar thoughts. The people of Israel who had just taken part in the Passover, who had just been brought out of Egypt by the hand of God, who had just seen spectacular things, who had only to look ahead of them to see God leading them in the pillar of cloud and fire. When they saw that their lives were in trouble, when they found themselves at a dead end, surrounded by things that weren't good, they said, what have you done to us by bringing us out of Egypt? It would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians than die in the desert. Was it because there were no graves in Egypt that you brought us to the desert to die? These people who knew of God's greatness, who saw God's greatness in front of them, when they found their lives were in trouble, in effect said, well, it's good to know about God, but how is that going to help us right now as we sit in trouble? And you know what God says? He simply says this: why are you crying out to me? Tell the Israelites to move on. Tell the Israelites to move on. Do you know, it kind of reminds me of another one of Simon and my travels. I do apologise for the personal stories all the time, but you know, there we are. We were travelling through Austria this time. Been through Switzerland, France, all that, yes. Austria. And Simon said to me, Kate, I'd like to go up a cable car. Now, I have to tell you, I'm a little bit afraid of being in enclosed spaces and hanging above stuff. So, you know, this was a bit scary. He said, I'd really love to go to the top of this mountain because there's spectacular views. And so I was like, okay, yeah, sure, we're on holiday. Surely I can't be frightened. It's holiday. So we bought the ticket, and there was no one around in the station, and I thought, oh, that's fine. We'll be on our own in the carriage so I can freak out as much as I can. No one will see me. But as the time came for the trip, well, crowds gathered. And then I had to visit the ladies just to get rid of the fear. And then I came out, and everyone was crowding into the carriage. And we crowded in, and I said, right, that's probably enough people. And they pushed more in. Oh, we have to get more in. And there we are, standing like sardines. And off we went. And I'm freaking out. Hot, cold sweats. Trying to look calm and smiling, but actually really, really scared. And then I looked up. And I started to glimpse a few of the views. I saw the lake where we were camping beside. And I was taken away from my moment. And I thought, this is nice. This is lovely. This is brilliant. And then we went over one of those bumpy bits, you know. And I freaked out. My life flashed before my eyes. I thought, this is it, we're going to die. This is the last thing I'm going to see is a lake. Brilliant. And I'm like, Simon's like, you're all right, Kate? You look a little bit pale. I'm fine. Freak out. And then I looked up again. And we passed the lake. We'd got a bit higher. And there was a mountain range that you could see from the lake, from the distance. But when you saw it from here, it was spectacular. I'd not seen anything like it. And I was taken away from my moment again. And I was looking. I thought, this is beautiful. I'm glad that I decided to do this. And then I turned to Simon and he said, oh, do you know, Kate, I've just thought. He said, if the cable car did, you know, break. I'm like, uh-huh. He said, we wouldn't fall straight to the bottom and die. And I was like, oh, thank goodness. Oh, that's such a relief. He said, no, we would hit the cliff and we would bounce and roll all the way down until we got crushed to death at the bottom. And I was like, brilliant. And I freaked out again. And my life flashed before me, except this time it involved crushing and bouncing and dying a horrible death. And then we got to the top, eventually. And I stood at the top, and the views were amazing. It had been an awful day. It had been raining all day. And as we stood there, the sun just glimpsed through the clouds and lit up the tops of the mountains. And I thought, you know, actually, despite the ups and downs of the journey, I am pleased that I decided to do it. And I wouldn't have missed that experience for the world. But don't tell Simon. He's not here today. Don't tell him. He might make me do it again. But, you know, the point is that, in a way, life is like that, isn't it? You know, every one of our lives is a mixture of joys and fear. You know, every one of our lives is a mixture of pain and delight. Every one of our lives is a mixture of hope and heartbreak. In fact, every one of our lives, I think, could be described as an epic adventure, an epic story, a long series of events characterized by adventure or struggle. And every church's life is like that as well. And so, you know, we can feel sympathy for the Israelites, can't we? That when they got to the sea, having come out of all that stuff in Egypt, must have got there and thought, oh, give us a break. You know, but instead, God reminds them. He says to them, why are you sitting there crying out to me? I am your God. I have been faithful to you. I am your God. I will deliver you. I am your God. I will bring you out on dry ground. Now, move on. And you know, in a way, I think it's the same for us today. Because, you know, from my own experience, and I'm sure from some of your experiences, that we can tell that wherever we are in our epic, whatever part of adventure we're on, a good part or a bad part, whether our life is happy, whether our life is sad, whether we like what we're facing or not, wherever we are, I can guarantee that if we have the courage to get up and move on with God and follow what he is doing, then he'll never let us down, because he is our God. He is the God who delivers. He is the God who brings us out on dry ground. He is the God who brings us out of darkness. He is our God today. But you know, this passage also highlights something else to me, because I have a picture in my mind of the Israelites as they're trapped between the rocks and the foreign lands and the sea and the Egyptian army. And I can imagine them sitting there as a community crying out to God. And it makes me think of us, you know, people of God today. We have a new minister. We're in a new time, you might say. We finally walked away from being a church without a minister. But many of us might still feel tired and worn. Many of us might feel a little unsettled. What is happening? Many of us might feel fearful. What changes are going to take place now? And maybe some of us want to kind of hang back and wait. But we don't really know how to do that, because you can't really go back. Some of us actually want to turn around and maybe go back to other times where we felt very comfortable. But that's impossible. Maybe some of us want to see exactly where we're going to go before we commit. But that never really works. It's as if we may be sitting hemmed in by the sea, waiting for something to happen. And you know, I also have a picture in my mind of the Israelites when God tells them to move on, when the sea parts and dry ground is revealed. And I can imagine them getting up together, putting their arms around the weak, picking up the children, helping those they care about and those they're not so keen on, drawing together as a community for the first time and moving on together. They probably didn't know where they were going to end up, And many of them were probably scared. But they didn't want to leave anyone behind. That was their priority. And I think that that's vital for us today as a church. Because, you know, it's easy to hear from up here that God is in control. It's easy to hear that God will part the sea before us and we will walk out on dry ground. It's easy to hear what an amazing God we have. But to follow God, we need to get up and move on with him. And most importantly, I think, we need to do it as one community, getting up together, putting our arms around the weak, picking up the children, helping those we care about and those we struggle with, drawing together as a community, committing our lives to each other, maybe for the first time, not knowing where we're going to end up exactly, but making it a priority that not one person gets left behind. I know if we do that, if we stand up together, if we seek to move on together, if we really commit to each other, I'm sure we will find, just like the Israelites, that in our epic story at Cotterna, that will be an important moment. Maybe at times we might forget in our journey how to follow God, but if we stand together now and commit to each other as a real community, I don't think we will ever forget what God will do through us. Let's pray together.